Listen, there's a great work to be done. As soon as you win this court battle, you must deliver this message. Take advantage of this opportunity and declare a powerful message to this world. He expects more of us. He believes we can do more. Who's going to stop Christ? Who's going to stop Christ from getting this work done?
This is Behind the Work.
Welcome to Behind the Work. I'm Grant Turgeon. We have with us today the host of a new history podcast on KPCG. It's titled Rewind Repeat. It's Mr. David Vigil. Thanks for coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
And also, thanks for doing this on your day off. I'm very appreciative of that. You didn't have to come in, but that's great. Also, I apologize if we're blowing your cover, because as far as I can tell, your name hasn't been attached to this project yet. So you're probably just the most humble host on the entire radio station.
The name's there on the website, but I just don't normally broadcast things.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. So maybe we can just start today with how you became interested in history, because you can actually hear it in the episodes how excited you are about it.
Yeah, I've always loved history. I think, like most guys, the history on war is always interesting. World War II, World War I, ancient warfare, that's always one of the best hooks there. But just, I would say, a general curiosity in how things have gotten to this point, really. I think guys can be curious in physical things, and I'm more curious in just how we've gotten to what we see today. So, like, the ideas that we see on TV or here in mainstream media, they come from somewhere. I really loved we had a Spokesman's Club speech last year about, like, even why we wear suits, those kinds of things. Like, why do we wear a tie still? Why do we wear a suit? Those kinds of questions. So just curious in how things come up.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I often look at news events today and, like, the stuff we tend to argue about politically, and it's all just so small compared to, you know, is a gigantic army about to come raid our village and we have absolutely no chance to defend against that. I mean, stuff like that, at least in the West, at least in America, doesn't happen today. We don't have to worry about being the victim of some seismic force just rampaging through. So I've always thought about that and just kind of appreciated that we didn't live, you know, 1,000 years ago.
Which I actually think was one reason why America's so bad in history, too, because they don't have, in some ways, to worry so much about. No invading forces come over, and so they're just not as interested, I think, in those kinds of things.
Yeah, and even whenever we had the American Revolution, it seemed like even our volunteers were a lot better at just knowing the land and hiding out, and they had their own guns, and they had at least a chance of defending themselves, which you couldn't really say people going against Attila the Hun had any chance at all.
No.
so it's quite a bit different there. Little known fact, you were actually my history teacher in high school and college.
Oh, wow.
So it's been a long time that I've known that you liked history, and now you have your own show. So how did this come about?
So I think it's come about from a lot of different reasons. The probably most direct reason is that in our trumpet meetings, Mr. McDonald, Mr. Hilliker, even Richard Palmer, we've talked about doing a history show for a while and centering it on at least the first part around Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. So that it's just hard. I don't know how much time everyone has. So I just decided to step in there. But also, one of the things I just like about the medium is that you basically do say what you want to say or for how long you want to say it. When you're teaching history in school, you have to tie it to certain curriculum. You have to be able to measure students' learning. So you have to do tests, you have to do quizzes and those kinds of things, which can, for some guys, I think, just turn them off. Like, that whole learning environment can kind of turn you off history. But with the podcast, you can just give the fun stories, not have to worry about someone taking a test later. And so that's another reason why I just appreciate having more freedom and being able to talk about the history and not have to worry about some of the other things that come when you're teaching in a class. And by having that freedom, it's even more, I think, you can get into some of the more interesting details that maybe not matter as much. You don't have to worry about testing them, but make it come more to life.
I think that's actually one of the things that I've really enjoyed from the show is that I can tell you're going to hit the highlights, like the most important, most interesting, most relevant parts, and you're not necessarily stuck to a textbook. That's a part that really stands out to me. But what would you say some of the goals are for your show?
So the main goal I have is to bring out the history that surrounds either prophecies or just biblical understanding, bring it to life so that people can understand more about those prophecies or more about the Bible. So it really is underpinned by a greater understanding of the Bible. It's not just any random history. We're not going to be covering history that's not tied into some way with prophecy or the Bible. So that's my main goal. And the second goal is just to get people interested in history, maybe if they have time. And even if they stop listening to the show, if they start reading history books, I think that would be a great thing for people to do.
So then even in that way, you would consider it mission accomplished.
Oh, yeah.
We just really do need a lot more people to look at history. That's evident today all the time, that people should be reading about it or listening about it or whatever the case might be. We can't talk today without speaking about Charlemagne, obviously, since you just did a 5-part series about that to start off your show. One part that was really great in the first episode, you made the listeners think about how history would view Hitler if he had won in World War II, or how might history view Hitler many years from now? Because you said basically there have been a lot of evil people in history where after enough time has passed, we actually view them mostly favorably.
Yeah, I think growing up as a teenager and going over the Napoleonic histories when that idea first really hit me, because you would see in, I guess just TV shows or just the way media portrayed Napoleon as like, this is some great guy. But then you're reading in the Bible and you're reading in Who and What is the Prophetic Beast that Napoleon is actually one of the instruments used by Satan's empire, you could say. So that contradiction there, I think, presented that first idea for me. And then I'm a fan of Dan Carlin's Hardcore History podcast, and he brought that out with King Alexander the Great, that there's actually a lot of Greek people at the time that thought he was a tyrant. And so that was the first time I heard about that one. And so you just think about all those tyrants that you give them enough time, and if they're not as evil or crazy as Hitler to actually try to kill all the Jews, you know, they just naturally end up looking better. I've seen people trying to make Genghis Khan look better. I mean, these guys are just murderers and they butchers, and that they given enough time, people come along and try to make a case and defend them.
Well, it is interesting how these different men are framed, because like you said, Napoleon is looked upon pretty well, but I think you even mentioned that if he had won, like if he had gone into Russia and been successful, he would be glorified a lot more. Also, he's not nearly as lionized as someone like Alexander the Great, who was actually even way before Napoleon by hundreds and hundreds of years. And he also won nonstop before his early death. Mm-hmm. So you just see how obviously winning is important, but also the passage of time really matters whenever we view these people. Because after 1,000 or more years, the fact that you killed a lot of people to people who are just reading the history, maybe just looks like you were pretty successful.
Yeah. Same with Caesar too. So you see that across the history in different areas of the world, even with like Genghis Khan. So it's like at some given enough time, people just seem to not to care about those kinds of things.
So that was only what you covered really in the first part of your first episode about Charlemagne. There was obviously a lot of other great information there. And it seemed like if people just would read that history and try to understand that history, they'd realize it's greater than any fiction. It's better than any fictional show. Even a lot of shows today are based on history, but just kind of loosely. And you can tell that the directors are trying to make it interesting. I think Game of Thrones, from what I've read, has dragons flying in there, but the rest of it is supposed to be based on history, but then they add in the dragons as if the history is not interesting enough, which yeah. isn't true. The history is so great that sometimes if we just didn't mess with it, if we just left it alone and presented it as is, people would be enthralled by that too.
Yeah, I actually think the coolest history, the most interesting history, is the history of the church, because that's some of the most least understood history there, and there's so many amazing plot twists. I mean, even in the Philadelphia and Laodicean eras, just going through that history, if anyone was going to do a fiction, you know, that's a plot line you could trace and probably do quite well with.
And that's actually the way you set up the subject of Charlemagne, because you didn't even get into talking about Charlemagne himself until episode 4, because the point of talking about Charlemagne is just to show that he had a religious force that was really propelling him and making him a lot stronger than he would have been otherwise. So you had to lay the groundwork for that and show there was a war between the true church and the false church. Maybe you could just briefly summarize how the Catholic Church became known as the one true church.
So, I think that was one kind of the interesting things about doing this in the history podcast, is because one of the main ways they were able to do that was to control the history. So they destroyed the records. All you have is essentially what's recorded in the Bible, and then a few accounts kind of pop out when you hear about people keeping the Sabbath or not keeping Easter. But basically, controlling the information. So, and to outsiders, they all look the same, even though they're different. And that's kind of a point, I think, in episode 2, maybe 3, but to pagans at the time, doctrinal differences were just kind of weird. Like, I don't think they understood why the Christians would go to arms, even like Catholics and non-Catholics who aren't true church.
Because they think they're exactly the same.
Yeah, they're like, why are you guys fighting over this? Yeah, I think that's actually episode 2. We covered that. But those differences matter. They're huge. I mean, that's the point. You know, we have God's law, and Satan's really subtle about it, and he'll make those slight changes, and before you know it, you're no longer the church of God. But basically, controlling the information, and then when they're able to get into power with the Roman Empire, then they turned violent and essentially squelched and crushed and used any kind of means possible by using the authority of the Roman Empire and the troops there to crush the true Church of God and all the other all the other churches out there too.
I think that's enough to shake a lot of people's faith in history books, just knowing that the victor always writes those. So how would you say people could verify the history they're reading and make sure it's actually true?
Yeah, and they do weird things too, because those people that their forefathers were killing, they'll still turn into saints,
right?
And make it seem like, oh yeah, he was one of the good guys too. But I'm thinking in my head, but they killed him. They didn't agree with it, so they do all sorts of weird things like that.
Yeah, that's really tough. I guess the Bible is a good way to look at it and try to cross-reference a lot of the secular sources, at least as far as the Bible goes. But it is important to realize that the victor does write the history books. Like what if Germany and Japan had won World War II? Like, how would we look at that mm-hmm. today? You'd have to really be discerning to figure out what actually happened, because people are of course going to just sort of slant the history to their own side and try to make themselves look better if they're writing the books. That's just human nature.
And they're trying to do that currently right now by minimizing what they did during World War II. But it just shows you how important education is. And you know, I think there's a lot of discussion about things like math curriculum and how to maybe approach teaching some of those subjects. And yet underlying all of that is just the importance of history, because you are teaching people how to think, like how to approach life and their philosophy. And even you see that with the younger generation accepting socialism and communism. That's simply because no one taught them the results of those systems there. And even we have a modern day one in Venezuela, and still no one's talking about that. But you can see how you can mold an entire generation into a way you want just by how you teach history.
Yeah, it does seem like the deception is really strong. And just even this whole push to get rid of history as required courses in high school and college, especially in college, and the fact that people always joke that if you majored in history, it's a worthless degree, which is so far from the truth, it's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, if you don't see history, you can't really understand the world around you.
Yeah. But, you know, the great thing about that, too, is history is one of those subjects that's a lot easier, one of the easiest ones to get into. If you just start reading, and no matter what age you're in, you can start educating yourself in that and start learning and putting it into your thinking a lot more than, say, science, where you might need a laboratory or math when you start getting into differential equations or something like that. So,
yeah, that's very true. So another thing that stood out from this opening series that you had about Charlemagne was just that the Catholic Church at different times was actually on the verge of extinction, just because certain Roman rulers especially were hostile toward them, but they always found a way to endure and sort of survive through those periods. And then when they got power, they were able to turn around and really use that to their advantage. It kind of reminds me of the Prophet Muhammad in Islam, when at the beginning of the Quran, he's writing about how you have to be really nice and generous and forgiving and patient with people. But then as soon as he got power, the whole tenor of the book changes, and he's talking about warfare and bloodshed and all this. It seemed like the Catholic Church kind of had a transformation like that too, depending on how powerful they actually were.
Yeah, definitely. You just see human nature. And I think that was one of the things that going through that history this time around really did kind of surprise me. I didn't realize like how subtle Satan's deceit is to put them in a situation where they're at their backs and almost extinguish. It makes them look better, makes them look like they must be heroes,
right?
Even though they're part of Satan's system there and his religion, really. So he's just a mastermind about that. Makes them look good. Although we know through the prophecy that they're never just going to be completely wiped out. That counterfeit's going to be there. So yeah, it's pretty interesting to see. Just the classic, once they're in power, they just start killing everybody. I mean, every single thing that they were fighting against or complaining about, and they ended up doing the same things.
Right. It's definitely different when you're on the other side of it. You have a totally different perspective there. Another part of that five-part series on Charlemagne was showing how there were emperors in the East and the West, and there were a bunch of them, but then they were trying to whittle it down to one. It was just really entertaining to hear about that, where even though they're all intermarried so that supposedly they have stronger alliances, they're willing to just discard that in a second if they see a path to unrivaled power there.
Yeah, and you see that too in episode 4 when you talk about the Franks. They go through the same pattern. And that was really interesting to me. And that's why I went into that history. I think from a storytelling aspect, that was probably one of the more difficult parts, because there's so many people involved, and what are the odds people can keep track of all the threads? So hopefully you're able to do that. But I did think it was just interesting to see, because at any point, those guys could have stopped fighting. They could have shared power, and you would think that would be better than being dead. But they all took the gamble for ultimate total power. They'd rather be dead than sharing it even in halfway.
And even one of the characters you talked about was looking for more relatives to kill off. I mean, it just shows if you get enough power, a lot of rulers throughout history have chosen power over their own family, even to the point of killing off their own family, as shocking as that is.
Yeah, it was Clovis in episode 4. It's pretty amazing. Just what people do for power. And I think when you go through history as a child, maybe in elementary or especially middle school, I remember we went through like a medieval time period, and you kind of get into the knights and the castles and all that kind of history there, and you think, oh, it'd be so cool to be a king at that time. And then you realize, well, actually the lifespan if you're a royal is actually pretty low. It's kind of the history you don't really get till you read later on your own, and then you just realize how brutal it was.
You'd almost rather be a farmer outside the city gates than be a king whose whole family is possibly conspiring to kill him.
Yeah.
That's kind of the paradox there, because obviously the farmer has nothing. He doesn't have much protection if an army comes, because he's outside the gates. But the king has to worry about everyone within the gates, which is probably a more scary, paranoid daily existence.
Yeah, the unknown danger there. Yeah, it's brutal. It's brutal either one, but I guess you get fed better if you're a king.
That's, maybe you would prefer that even if you knew there was a constant
trying to
threat.
Poison you with that food.
The power of the belly. That's right. Well, obviously all of this is leading up to Charlemagne, and Charlemagne had quite a contrast between just the sheer brutality of his rule, trying to convert all the pagans, and then also being really advanced in terms of art and culture. Maybe you could just talk a little bit about that.
Yes. Yeah, so one of the things that if you were to read about Charlemagne in textbook, they would focus a lot on what they call a Charlemagne Renaissance, or the fact that he brought in a lot of better ideas to administer the empire, better currency. He really encouraged the arts and writing and things like that. So you have that contrast there. It's a lot like one of the things Mr. Fleury has said that's always stuck in my head, where you think about like all the great German composers that were around at the time composing their music as the Habsburgs were basically trying to squash their Protestant enemies. And that, I thought that was a great contrast between like, here's some of the most celebrated people in the arts and we love their music, and it's being sponsored by one of the worst governments ever. And it's the same thing with Charlemagne. He sponsored a lot of things that I think we could look at and be and think, oh, well, isn't that great? But at the same time, and that's why we go through that history of the Catholic Church, it was still always in support of the Catholic Church, and also just built on the backs of just all that carnage that he laid down.
And it's also extremely relevant for Europe today, because they openly glorify Charlemagne and they say that they need to return to the tradition of Charlemagne. Obviously, they're going to focus on the art and the culture and everything else, all of the good stuff, because they don't want to set off alarm bells around the world that they're going to try to go on another rampage like Charlemagne did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then they just kind of brush away some of the violent stuff. But you get some of those more honest statements every once in a while, like that quote that we brought up in the program, but Mr. Fleury's brought up in the Trumpet magazine quite often, like, well, if we're being honest, it was through rivers of blood. So it is, that's kind of the thing that it's interests me when you go through that history and you take a certain period of time like that, you do learn quite a few lessons. And it's really some of the most fundamental lessons, no matter what time period you're going through. You're looking at how mankind and its civilization is built without God, you know, when it's all human nature and Satan's broadcast. So you see that across the board. I don't know Eastern history as much, but I know like it was the same way with China there. They had a lot of division, and then some emperor comes and like kills an amazing amount of people. I mean, probably enough people that equal the total population of Europe kind of thing, but brings in unity, and then they get like this civilization rebirth kind of thing. It's just the same lesson over and over and over, that unfortunately a lot of the progress comes after some severe periods of tyranny. I mean, the only exception really is the United States and Britain and the Israelite countries when they're in power. Everywhere else, it always comes after some tyrant gets in control.
Right. We basically had 6,000 years of proof that human rule leads to failure in the end. Even those positive examples you just mentioned, like America and Britain, they've been great for hundreds of years. But look at where we are now. Look at the dangers we're facing from within and without right now. So that just shows that even if it's not a tyrannical form of government, if it's still a government of men, eventually it does fall apart. So there has to be a greater hope than just being ruled by human beings who would betray you for almost no reason, as history has shown.
Yeah. And anyone who has any understanding of history would realize how concerning this whole situation of the declining United States. If you have any understanding of history, you just know you're headed towards trouble. And you have all these people who are speeding the decline down, all the liberals and millennial progressives and all them. They have no idea what they're calling for and what's going to happen. No idea.
It's really just a matter of, what do you think the alternative is?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you really think it'd be better going the way of Cuba or Venezuela or even Russia or China? People, again, they focus on the good of China, their powerful economy. What about the fact that every person there is under the most minute scrutiny and constant surveillance. The government knows every little thing that they are doing.
Yeah.
And maybe they could argue that it's the same here, but not to nearly the same extent as over there. And they just don't have freedom. The internet is censored over there where they can't even find truth if they wanted it. Obviously, North Korea is a more extreme example of that. There is just no better nation in the world, and yet we have people here complaining every day that they would rather be in any of those nations instead.
Yeah, and it's crazy too because a lot of them have actually helped China create that police state there, so they're already going back on their values. But it's just amazing to think about that, because the answer is always, well, you know, we can do it better, like somehow. And I think that's the one lesson they get from whatever little history they get is that humanity is always getting better. They're getting smarter, quote unquote, evolving. But when you look at that history and you get into it, you realize, like, people are just as smart back then as they were today. They may not have had access to the same technology, but you're not necessarily going to be smarter just because you've been born 2,000 years later. So to think that somehow we're going to make it work because we got different people, our democracy, as if that can stay in check with what they're talking about. I mean, these are contradictions, but yeah, it seems like the one lesson that these schools teach is totally incorrect, that we're always getting better. It's the one thing people seem to think about when it comes to history.
That really is a foolish way of looking at it on their part. And of course, people listening to this can go to thetrumpet.com and see all these problems clearly described. Your show does that really well too. And we can maybe just conclude today just talking about some of the upcoming subjects on your show, maybe give people a teaser for what's in store.
Sure, yes. It'd be good for anyone listening to know that the show is done pretty much all my free time, so it's not going to come out too soon. I think the next series won't come out till my guess winter time.
Well, it seems like those would take forever to put together. The amount of research you did, one of the episodes was 76 minutes long, so this is not something that you just put together in 30 minutes every week.
No, it takes some time, and the next subject I'm tackling right now is the Antiochus, or for anyone who likes their Latin, Antiochus. We're going to be going into that. I think it'll be great because it will focus on what goes on in Israel and Jerusalem, and Mr. Fleury's admonition lately of focusing on Jerusalem. I think that will give a historical perspective on that, which I think will be really great. So that's the next one I'm going to. We hear a lot about the Antiochus type. We have that political one we just saw. We have the one in the church. We have one coming in the Holy Roman Empire coming up soon. So I think just going through that history can add some more life to that type and what it means. So that's the next topic. Then after that, I'm not quite sure. We'll see. I'm always interested in feedback. If people wanted to get into certain subjects, they can always let me know and I can consider them. But I'm leaning towards something more heavily focused on maybe United States and Britain prophecy, maybe some aspect of that. After going through a couple of Gentile leaders, I think you want to go through some Israelite leaders. Stay a little more positive that way, too.
Well, that sounds like a pretty exciting roadmap. I've been speaking today with Rewind Repeat radio host David Vigil. Thanks so much for coming on today.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's been wonderful to talk with you. I'm Grant Turgeon. This has been Behind the Work.
You've been listening to Behind the Work. Email your thoughts to comments at kpcg.fm. Listen for a new episode each Monday at 11:30 a.m. Central Time.